So Anchor's got a new app and it's fucking horrible. So I'm not sure if my new recordings are gonna go through. But if anyways, if it does, the only thing I could really say is, yeah, dog.
Time for The Tainted Glove, starring your favorite man of questionable character, Aloha Mr. Hand.
Hey bud, let's party!
And the Holy Reverend K. Fitz himself. It's go time, so grab a beer, grab a bite, and settle in. It's time for The Tainted Glove.
Aloha, and welcome to the November 15th, 2022 edition of the Tainted Glove. I want to be your co-host, Aloha Mr. Hand, also known as the man of questionable character. And with me, as always, is the guiding light, my spiritual savior, the man who will lead me outside of the path of evil and into the path of light, the Honorable Reverend K. Fitz. And with that, K. Fitz, take it away.
Wow, I mean, I've never heard of it. The only thing I'm leading into the light is Caroline. What? Oh, never mind. I need a little short little person going, this house is a clear house. Good morning, though. Good afternoon. Good evening. Thanks for guys for tuning in. Whichever time you're listening to this podcast, if you're watching us live, thanks for tuning into the live show. I know that some of you guys are already in the chat. Smashed it up. Already telling everyone to smash the like button like you'd smash Kate Beckinsale. So I love it. Keep doing it. But welcome this week. It's been a couple weeks, and so we're back, and we're here to talk a little bit of Bears football, Cubs and Sox baseball, a couple things coming down. We're in that free agent period now for Major League Baseball, so things are starting to kind of get a little bit hot out there on the stove. And then we'll maybe touch a little bit on Wakanda Forever kind of a close. I'll just touch a little bit on it, but not too much. We'll save that a little bit till after Pete sees it. I don't want to spoil anything when he finds out at the end that Bruce Willis is actually a ghost. So we'll be careful with that. And God dang it.
Damn it.
Again. I did it again. That's my fault. That's my bad. But we'll have that. And obviously, I'm sure there'll be some shenanigans and some off-topic stuff, too, especially with some of these Yahoos I already see in the chat. So, again, thanks for tuning in. And let's kind of get right to it. So this weekend, the Bears played host to the Detroit Lions. And I unfortunately tweeted about how at least, you know, as Bears fans, we have the Lions to fall back on and make us feel a little bit better about ourselves. And then the Bears proceeded to blow a 13-point lead to the Lions and fall to the Lions. But I also don't think that it was necessarily as bad a loss. I think, in fact, it is a really strange world we live in right now, where Chicago sports fans are pretty intense. Most Bears fans were actually, oh, cool, I'm okay with losing today. Everyone was pretty happy. It was a weird thing. You know why? Justin Fields, period. It's almost like the whole world could be burning behind you and around you. And it's like that, I think it's a John Hamm gif where he's like sitting Indian style, like meditating, and like he's basically like floating in like Hades. That's basically us right now, because with Justin Fields, it's been exciting. So Bears lost. It's okay. We've moved up to sixth in the draft now. So now we're talking about some real talent if they can hang on with this. Justin Fields doesn't look like he's regressing or suffering from any PTSD. He looks like he's getting better every week. It's insane with no weapons other than Cole Kmet, which we'll talk about here in a second, as well as now they lost Khalil Herbert for a minimum 4 weeks today, which kind of sucks for the Bears, as well as my fantasy team, the one that doesn't have Montgomery, the other one that does. I mean, it's fine. But let's talk a little bit about it, Pete. I mean, the Bears, you know, this weekend they were at home, and, you know, we're all, you know, just like with the Bears or with the Lions, you know, everybody's, you know, in a kind of a, you know, the Bears traded off, you know, all three of their best, you know, the whole linebacking core basically has been gone and jettisoned in the last 12 months, nine, 10 months even. And so, like, you really are struggling with the defense. You don't have, you know, Akeem Hicks in the middle to clog the run. You're just not going to get much defense. And the defense has busted its ass and trying as hard as it can. But, you know, cream rises to the top eventually in football. You know, the stronger team and the stronger players are going to eventually, like, roll over you. And so the Bears gave up 21 fourth quarter points, you know, coupled with an extra point miss, and they ended up falling to the Lions 31-30. And the potential game winning drive ended on a couple of sacks. All of a sudden, the offensive line decided to stop blocking. and the Bears offense decided to stop running. So your thoughts, Pete. I mean, it didn't feel like a terrible loss. Losing to the Lions feels usually in a normal season, it feels like you've been kicked in the face with a steel tip Kodiak work boot and the trip to the emergency room, battered and bruised for reconstructive surgery. So, you know, it's not a terrible lead, right. Loss. And Sanborn has been a little bit of a cool thing to see, but how are you feeling? You on the fence with Swole? Sorry, I said he's on the fence.
I see both sides of the argument on the terrible loss thing. I think it's a terrible loss because you lost by a missed extra point. If Santos makes that extra point, it's overtime. You're going into OT, or the Lions try for two, and who knows what happens. So from that perspective, I think it's a terrible loss. From the draft positioning perspective, I think it's a good thing because, in theory, the higher up you are in the draft, the better the talent you'll get. I think it's a terrible loss because you had a 14-point lead on the Lions. It's not like you're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs here. It's the Lions, who, talent-wise, outside of who's the defensive line? Hutchinson, the Michigan guy for the Lions.
Oh, God, yeah. I think it'd be
Hutchinson. Ada Hutchinson, I think his name is. I forget the. It's something like Lions. That. Yeah. He's going to be a problem for the Bears. He is going to be an absolute problem for like the next 5 to 10 years. And I just think that while I understand the rationale of rebuilding and everything else and wanting to get the best draft pick, I also despise the fact of losing. And again, I stick with this. You're losing to the Lions. If you're losing to the Chiefs, you go, hey, we were in that game, but the Chiefs talent-wise just overwhelmed us. Because it goes with something I said at the beginning of the season. I could see the Bears being in a lot of games, but losing at the end because the talent level won't be the same. They won't have the same talent level as most of their opponents. That is not the case in this game. And that's what annoys me about it. They are on par with each other, talent-wise, basically. Mm-hmm. And the Bears gave it away.
Yeah, and there is a lot to be said about just learning to win.
Yes.
So that kind of hurts a little bit, too. And again, I'm with you, too. I hate losing. I don't think the Bears should tank on purpose, ever. Like, you'll never hear me say lose on purpose. I'm that asshole in your fantasy league that's in 12th place, still making moves in week 16 or whatever week it is that I'm still, when my account's finally not locked, I'm still making moves because I can't lose. I hate losing. And so it's the same thing. You don't want to get too comfortable with the losing. Right. So, I actually was extremely upset because I did bet Bears money line and that one didn't hit. And that sucks too. That happened twice this weekend. Actually, I was kind of a couple bad beats. I also blame the Cowboys in the Packers game too. I had both of them. I got money line in both of those games and both of them on my face. So, but with the with the Lions, it sucks. But what I always keep coming back to, and it really does make it easier for me to kind of cope, my copium, if you will, is that they have $116 million in cap space, a first rounder, 2 seconds, a third, 2 fourths, 2 fifths, and a seventh in the draft. And they're going to be drafting currently, at least, sixth. So it is one of those Tommy Boy meat lover pizza in the trunk kind of things. I'm disappointed with the loss, but we still got that meat lover's pizza in the trunk. And so Tommy can like Wingy all he wants.
Well,
because there's always a little silver lining to that.
There is another fear that I have. And I agree with everything you just said, but there is one fear that I have. I just don't want to see Justin Fields get damaged before they can execute on the draft. And my fear is...
You froze.
Still got me?
Oh, there you go. Gotcha. Come on, man.
Yeah. My fear is with this porous offensive line is that he's going to get bent at some point in the near future. That is my fear, that he's going to get hung. And people won't, he won't be the same. That is my absolute fear.
And in the NFL with running quarterbacks, that's got to be a fear for all time. But I really do feel this is something that's actually really stood out to me. And One of my students, actually, he's a big Eagles fan. I love this kid. He runs to my classroom when it's my class period just to talk football beforehand. Fantasy, regular, like it's just he rolls in with a new jersey every day from a different player. Love it. And he actually said something which it makes a really good point. And he watches a lot of football, obviously, because he's a big sports nerd. And he watches Lamar Jackson a ton, because why not? Of course you'd watch Lamar Jackson. And he said the biggest thing that he sees the difference, you know, everyone talks about Lamar Jackson and you know, him and his throwing woes early on in his career and where he's at right now. And he's not really super dominant right now at all. I know he's got a lot of players banged up around him. But then you look at Justin Fields, and Justin Fields plays faster than Lamar Jackson does. When he said that too, and it made me think, and I went back and started watching some things. I think it has to do with the fact that Justin Fields avoids contact, whereas Lamar Jackson almost goes looking for it. And I think other than like the touchdown, which was badass this week, where he like basically plowed over and knocked the dude basically out of the game for a couple plays with that touchdown run, I think that Justin Fields does such a fantastic job of somehow finding ways to avoid contact when at all possible. He doesn't seek it. He plays faster. And he like when you see him play, I think Lamar Jackson, maybe it takes longer for Lamar Jackson to get started. I don't know. I don't think he plays football fast or as football fast as Lamar, as Justin Fields does. I just don't. I think the time Justin Fields ran 22 miles an hour on that touchdown run, that's insane to think that a human can run that fast. And you see this with Justin Fields and the way that they're now calling plays for Fields, it's starting to kind of make sense. And you can't play that way your whole career, but you can definitely buy yourself some time in the meanwhile as you figure it out. Whereas quarterbacks in the past, like a Trubisky, who actually, you know what, Trubisky ran pretty well. He was able to mask it for a little bit too with his legs. But we'll go back a little deeper into the disappointings, is the Rex Grossmans, right? Or the Rick Myers. They had to throw out of it, but they couldn't run away from it. And with Fields, at least he can run, get some cover, and not be as beat up. I mean, even Cutler too. I mean, Cutler was decently mobile, but I mean, we all know that Jay Cutler didn't have that twitch until after that game in New York where he got sacked like 9 times in the first half. Yeah. And got concussed. Like that literally, I think, caused his twitch, because I had never seen that twitch before that week. Maybe I'm wrong, but you know, mm-hmm. that didn't help. And so with Fields, at least he has the ability to protect himself. And I think that's a good part about what his development is bringing. And I think the play calling has been, I'm a big fan. We're starting to see who really was calling plays for the Packers, because I really do see the versatility and the fluidity that comes from a Luke Getsy called offense. And I also see how awful that Broncos offense is with the former Packers offensive coordinator. We're obviously going to say, you know, we have to basically assume that Aaron Rodgers has been calling plays the entire time in Green Bay. But Getsy sure as hell has learned, because Getsy is adapting and adjusting and basically taking a physically superior athlete than Aaron Rodgers and playing a little bit with him. And I love it.
I totally get what you're saying with the Green Bay stuff, and you know, forever fuck the Packers. But you know what, my concern is Justin Fields getting banged because of lack of protection. The defense, I mean, they basically traded everyone away. This is the performance you can expect from the defense for the rest of the year. It just is, you know. If 1 year of sucking, for lack of a better way to put it, gets you a team where you're constantly in the playoffs, you are a serious Super Bowl contender, and you win Super Bowls, not one, multiple, then I'm all for it. You know, but it's hard to say that that's going to happen right now, because we really don't have a track record with Ryan Poles as far as drafting and understanding what he does. Because I'm going to stick with something I've said for years. I learned it as a kid. My father, my grandfather beat it into my head. Football is won and lost on the lines. You got to be able to block for the quarterback and sack the quarterback. And right now, I don't think they can do either. But that can change in a year's time with the amount of cap space they have, the number of draft picks they have, and everything else. They can certainly change.
Sure, right.
Right. So, you know, there is silver lining in it. It's not all doom and gloom. And you know what I called the previous GM of the Bears, the hipster doofus. Who, you know, I think he liked trading draft picks because he did not know how to assess talent, to be completely honest. I think that's the reason why
Jed Hoyer curse, where he can't draft for shit. He can trade for players.
The White Sox curse, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the White Sox curse too. Trade shit for shit. but
different kind of dumb.
Yes, exactly. But the question I have out of everything is, where was Claypool? Where was he Sunday?
Yeah. Now you traded, what did they trade? Fourth runner?
A third and a fifth, was it?
And a fifth, something. Yeah, like you gave up something to get this guy. But I also, you know, as much as they're not really kind of working him into the offense really fluid, they haven't had to much. That being said, I think that this is kind of a feeling out period. You know, he's joining them midstream. He doesn't know this offense. They don't know what they can do with him just yet. I think you're going to see, you know, I'm very interested to think that it feels like the acquisition of Claypool eliminated their desire to use Velus Jones, because he does what Velus Jones does. Kind of, he is that kind of guy. You can get that wide receiver flip and run in the backfield with him if you need to, like a Deebo Samuel. He's a big, big, strong wide receiver, and he's just learning how to maybe fit into this offense. And maybe this offense is still trying to figure out what the hell to do with him too.
Right. And you know, with Velus Jones, I believe it was on the Bumcast last night, I heard this, like they wildly overdrafted him. And I think they're paying for that mistake now, because he's been a healthy scratch the last 2 weeks, hasn't he? Basically, since Claypool's arrived, he's been a healthy scratch. Not a good sign.
I like this too. With Khalil Herbert being out, Velus Jones is probably going to get some snaps at running back this week. There we go. Maybe this. You know what that is? That's a fantasy, sneaky fantasy move, is to go and grab, if you're in a PPR league, go snag Velus Jones, just for, because if you've got an injured reserve list on your fantasy team, throw him on the injured reserve. If you're going with Herbert, I was rolling with Herbert for a little bit because I was not sold on, you know, Mostert's driving me nuts, and Jonathan Taylor's just been so shitty. I've been trying to just pair as many as I can with Derrick Henry, and I have Justin Fields as my quarterback, so that really is really helping.
Right.
I accidentally didn't start my quarterback on the other. I thought that the other guy was starting in Indy, and at the last minute they switched to Matt Ryan again. So I ended up playing in a 2-quarterback league, only one quarterback. Justin Fields scored more than both of my opponent's quarterbacks combined. So that was good. But same thing with this. You know, if you're fantasy, you know, maybe do a little flyer on Velus and see how the Bears use him at least for the next 4 weeks. And maybe you'll get like a Cordarrelle Patterson kind of thing, which is really valuable in a fantasy kind of thing. But I'm interested to see. I know Claypool had a little bit of, you know, having watched him a ton, because I always draft freaking Deontay Johnson from is it Deontay Johnson from Pittsburgh every year. I didn't this year, but usually I do. So I watch their games a ton, and Claypool, I have seen him. He does brain fart a bit on occasion, at least what I've seen when he's not involved. And when you get him involved, and you know, this is like when Johnson was out, he was getting involved a ton. He was a beast. So he is one of those greasy wheels kind of guys. I think if you don't work him in early, he's going to check out late, and which is a little bit of a red flag, but you know, you don't make him the most reliable. You know, he shouldn't be the Bears' best wide receiver. The Bears should get in. He should be the number two, and you should then put Mooney in the slot and have a real bona fide number one. And that's hopefully what the Bears are going to get sooner than later in this offseason.
Right. And our guy Baloney makes a great point. Velus can't run routes. That's a problem. Yes, it is. So maybe if he's put in as a running back, maybe that will help alleviate the problem. You know, but do you trust him to swing out for, you know, to swing out for a screen or something like that? I don't know. I just don't know. I think right now the return on Velus Jones is not good.
I think
management knows based on.
He's a rookie, though. I mean, he's a rookie, and
the Bears management, But I give them credit that they're not trying to, like the last regime, they're not trying to overplay their hand with this guy. I think they're seeing flaws, and they're not putting him out there to be fully exposed.
I think it has more to do with the fact that he's a rookie.
And it's a shitty to go about it, yes.
I think it has more to do with the fact that he's a rookie, and right now, because things are so bad offensively with just the whole roster, like front to bottom, especially the offensive line. You've seen the Bears put out very veteran guys out there, whether it's, you know, Pettis, who drives me insane, but these are veteran, older players. I mean, look at that wide receiving corps outside of Mooney.
Yeah.
They're old. They're all old. Neil, you know, N'Keal Harris or whatever, they're older. You've got more veteran, you know, they keep, you know, St. Brown. These are older, or at least more experienced guys. And yes, Velus Jones is a 25-year-old rookie, but he still is a rookie and playing his first round of NFL football. And you're starting to see the development of someone like, say, a Cole Kmet. Correct, Jack. And we'll talk about that here in a second. That I love it. I'm super stoked on Kmet. So I really want to come back to the Kmet stuff in a second, because I know there's a lot of people in a former DM that I was in eating a lot of shit now because they used to shit all over Cole Kmet every Sunday, not taking into consideration certain aspects like the fact
that he's 21. I would just say that
21 when he was drafted. He's like the reverse of Velus Jones. Velus Jones is a 25-year-old rookie. Cole Kmet was a 21-year-old rookie. I mean, he still has another year before any of these quarter, like other tight ends like Cole Kmet or Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews. He is now the same age Mark Andrews was when he started his career, but not when Mark Andrews started catching touchdown passes and being the elite Mark Andrews when he's healthy that he is. Kelce wasn't even until he was 24 was when he was drafted, let alone that. He has more catches. And again, you just look at it. Kelce was 24 when he broke out. Kittle was drafted at 24. All these other tight ends, the tight end is a position that you figure it out, you know, midway through your mid, you know, in your mid 20s, basically, it looks like. You know, that seems to be the pattern because you got to figure it out. Well, Cole Kmet's figuring out at 23. He has more than 100 catches. What does he got right now in his career? He's 23 years old. He's got 111 catches, 1,129 yards, and 7 career touchdowns already. And he is still not old enough to rent a car on his own.
And right? It's funny.
Is it still 25?
I know. So
I think it's still 25,
I believe, to rent a car.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Just making sure. Did they change that?
Yeah.
Yeah. 25.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if they raise it. If they raise it. Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't be surprised if they raise it to 30 now. But, yeah, I know some people who are on the doubt of Cole Kmet train. And again, you do have to say the last couple of weeks, he's been playing very well, you know, but question becomes, can he sustain it? But that's a question for a lot of the Bears. And, you know, again, the schedule doesn't get easier from this point forward. This was actually sort of like one of the softer parts of their schedule. You got Atlanta on Sunday, which is basically Bears front office south, because I think Pace is there. Isn't Phil Emery there too?
Could be.
I think you have several Bears, former Bears front office people there. That could be a winnable game. But after that, you get the Jets in New York, which, you know, Beefloaf will be happy because the Jets should win that game. J-E-T-S, Jets. When you're a Jet till the end. But then you get the Packers at Soldier Field. Could this be the game where they finally put Aaron Rodgers in his place? After all the years of I own you and the 30 years of ass kickings that the Packers have delivered to the Bears, is this where we can finally see the shift?
I want it to be moment. When Justin Fields runs rampant over them, puts up 180 yards rushing, another 170 yards in the air, 5 touchdowns to teach the Packer fans exactly what they can expect for the next decade. I would love to see Justin Fields
roll into the
Lambo and teabag Lambo as a collective. Take that into the offseason.
I want to see him do the belt. Remember when Rodgers did the belt?
I want him to do the belt and then wipe his ass with the belt. I want him to take it another level. I want him to disrespect the belt.
You mean do the Randy Moss on the goalpost?
Yeah, I need a combo like title belt, Randy Moss, mixture of a demonstrative.
His ass on the goalpost or something?
He mooned the fans. He fake mooned the fans. And then he got suspended for that. back in the day. Like now, I mean, you can pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, and that's the thing. That'll be great. That's the stuff that we can look forward to. But, you know, in the here and now, we can see these guys developing. I am excited about Cole Kmet. Again, you know, he is having, you know, if you look at his numbers, since week five, he's had either, other than the stinker against Washington, which was everybody's stinker, he's had at least 40 yards. He's had, you know, four catches for 45 yards, three catches for 32 yards, two catches for 11 yards, but a touchdown, five catches for 41, two touchdowns, four catches for 74, two touchdowns. I mean, he's starting to, like, again, as Fields figures this offense out, he's starting to find his little role in there, which is a perfect safety valve for when someone either, you know, figures it out and tries to spy, you know, properly. He's a safety valve, especially in the red zone, which is fantastic. I love that he's a red zone. He's a red zone beast right now. He's a red zone beast. Or he's that guy that is savvy enough and pretty athletic enough and strong enough to, when someone overcommits, worried about Justin Fields, like this happened this weekend, getting that extra step and just finding themselves in a wide open space like he did on that big long touchdown catch, because someone overreacted to Justin Fields' athletic ability, and he is still an athletic freak zone. So he, you know, he flipped out, and there he is. He's wide open, and Fields got him. Yeah. Easy touchdown. But the thing is, you give him the ball in space, he is strong. He gets like head of steam. It's going to take four or five guys to tackle him. It's been that way since college. And when he played against, I want to say it was against Bama or Georgia, I can't remember, at Notre Dame, I remember that he had one of his best games of his career against them. And bro is carrying people, like four, five, six of that elite defense, carrying them with him. They couldn't take him down. He's that strong, and he's that way. So that's it's kind of a cool thing. And I did. I like that home run swing. Yeah, you're right. I love that. He did the home run swing, TD dinger. That was a good one. That was a good celebration. So it's either way, though, you're good to see that. I think Cole Kmet's going to be the hot fantasy pickup this week too, because he is so involved. He's kind of like he is turning into the Andrews that Lamar Jackson has. He's a safety valve, and in the red zone, he's bigger than everybody else and stronger than everybody else. You go to him. And so it's working. And, you know, I like seeing that development. Now I'd love to see him be more involved in the center part of the field, outside of just the red zone. And, you know, like what happened this week, finding him a little bit more frequently. I think, you know, he should probably get 7 to 8 targets a week. I think that Mooney should get probably get 5 to 6. Mooney's weird enigma too, but and then you got Claypool. You want to get involved more and more. So, you know, I think we need a day when Dante Pettis is not on the field. That will make me very happy one day. I think St. Brown's okay. But it's really kind of subpar after, you know, Claypool. So
yeah, he's a guy. He's a guy. He's nothing he's more, nothing less. He's just a guy.
To circle back to that point too is
right.
They're veterans out there for a reason. I think that that's one of the reasons Velus Jones isn't out there, is because he's a little bit green and he's got to learn what they got to do out here, age or not. And that he isn't enough to protect Justin Fields. And I think that's a reason why he's not out there. I think that him being out there leaves Justin Fields more exposed than if he were to learn on the side at practice in his first year of development within the Bears system. He's got his body's in great shape. He's not getting beat up or wear and tear. So he's wasting much prime stuff. He's already where he's got to be physically. So I don't hate it. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's all because he's just not getting it or what, but I feel like it's because he doesn't give the Bears the best chance to protect Justin Fields optimally. So the other veteran guys get out there instead, just because they can understand the concepts and whatnot. Maybe not though. Maybe he's just shitty and they're like, this guy sucks, and we're really disappointed.
I agree with you, but right. And that's where I'm stuck, to be honest with you. I don't know if he's green or he's shitty, because I'm tending to lean towards shitty because of one reason. If he was green, I think they would still have him suit up and just selectively put him in for certain plays. But they have him as a healthy scratch, which to me is never a good sign. So I'm just thinking it might be that they know he's shitty because of them putting him as a healthy scratch.
His first healthy scratch was the first start or the first game with Claypool. That was his first healthy scratch was then. So those two are some sort of common denominator there. The two of those are connected in some way.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Right. So, and as we look,
there's no denying that.
And with, you know, what the Bears have coming up now, I mean, this week is, what do we got? The Falcons this week. I think the Bears are going to win this week. I think they could take this week. I really do. I think this is a Monty. This is a Justin Fields Monty game. Foreman has done to the Falcons two of the last 3 weeks. He has run roughshed over them. I think Justin Fields is going to have a big day, but I also think that Montgomery, I think he's going to have a big day on Sunday because the Falcons did the physicality part on the line. It ain't happening for them now. Maybe it won't, but they've been giving up chunks and chunks and chunks. And I think that that's a really good sign for the Bears. So I think the Bears can take that one. I think that the Jets is going to be a question mark, but I think that this is a cool little game though. I think it's a nice experiment because the Jets are also finally, for God's sakes, are finally feeling like they're on the up and up as well. This season, they're starting to actually see the development of, you know, what looks like a half a decade of like top three picks every year.
Then
you've got the Packers game. You got that Packers game, and that's that Packers game can be everything. There's no chance they're going to beat the Eagles. They're going to get absolutely just destroyed by the Bills. And then they got a New Year's Day destination with the felines. To kind of pop them, and then they could play a spoiler maybe to the Vikings. And if the Vikings are in the hunt for a 1 or 2 seed, maybe week 18, 17, or whatever the hell it is, they can knock the Vikings off, hit Kirk Cousins in his mouth.
And 18.
They're such smoke and mirrors. They were the worst, 9-1 team I've ever seen, which is weird saying that, but every single one of their ball games could have gone a different direction. And it's just, whew.
Yeah. The New Year's Day game has me a little concerned, and I'll tell you why. It has nothing to do with the game plan or anything else. If the Bears players are like me at those ages, when I was in Detroit, I was actually in Windsor. Who are you crapping? That's where everyone's going. They're going to Windsor to celebrate New Year's Eve.
Windsor's fun. Just jump right over. Was it the Mackinac Bridge? The Mackinac Bridge, is that what it's called? No.
What's it called?
It's the big bridge. The big bridge.
Well, you got the bridge or the tunnel. I always called it the Proby Tunnel because that's where Probert got busted with drugs, and that prevented him from ever going back to Canada way back in the day. It's. I don't think it's.
Bridge?
I don't
think is it's, that what it is? To Windsor?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Man, I'm just trying to remember. I'm
Detroit. Yeah, Detroit Bridge to Windsor. It's always under construction. It's always under construction.
Yeah, there. Yeah. This is the bridge that jumps over to Canada, right? And to Mackinac City. And then you pop. Don't you pop over to Windsor?
It goes right into Windsor.
Yeah, I drank there when I was like 19. I thought it was the coolest thing. I was like the coolest.
Absolutely.
I went to a fucking sandwich place.
Ambassador Bridge.
I got a Heineken.
Thanks to our friend Baloney. It's the Ambassador Bridge.
My first legal beer was a Heineken, and it tasted skunky. I remember that. It was a sandwich place. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I was on a church trip.
Get a Heineken. Why would you get a Heineken? Why not get a Labatt's or a
19-year-old kid didn't know shit. I hadn't even started drinking really beer at that point. So like, you know, a Heineken tasted so skunky to me. I'm like, oh, this is gross. There's something else over here we can get that I can enjoy. Maybe some.
All I remember is I was in my glory because I was drinking Canadian beer and smoking Cuban cigars. That's all I remember. And nice. They let you smoke in the finer establishments too.
Ooh. Yeah, so that was
I was in my glory.
Windsor, Canada. I want to look. We went to Niagara a couple years ago. That was fun. And then we crossed over and went into whatever that weird carnival town is. That was weird.
I have a quick story about Windsor. So I was there with some friends to see the White Sox play the Tigers in Detroit in old Tiger Stadium. So this is in the 90s. Huh. So we actually stayed in Windsor at the casino. And Saturday night, we went to the game, a Saturday afternoon game. We went to the game, went back, hit the casino, then went out to dinner, then hit the finer establishments and was in one of the finer establishments. I will not say which one. I will tell you offline which one it was. And there was a White Sox Hall of Fame player in this finer establishment with us. He was going through some marital issues at the time. He was getting divorced. He has since remarried. And I wound up peeing next to him in the bathroom. Huh. And let me just say I did one of these, and I know you can't see it, took a look, and my drunk, dumb ass said to him, now I nice know why puke. They call you the Big Hurt.
That's a little more clever than just asking about his pube. So that's a well done. That's a well done one.
And he just looked at me like, get this stupid drunk white boy out of here.
Like, pretty funny. I'm one of those weirdos that are maybe not weirdo, I guess, but I'm one of those.
My run in.
Chatty Cathy's at the urinal. I love Chatty Cathy's at the urinal. Those are my favorite. I'm like, talk about the weather, talking about anything. I'm like, I really don't want to talk to you, man. I'm focused right now and not sprinkling on my hands. So let's be careful here. It's just focus, right? Focus.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly.
Do you know Windsor is actually the birthplace of Seth Bullock, the guy that went to Deadwood and was the inspiration for a really badass HBO character from the show Deadwood. Never knew that he was a Canadian, and let alone from Windsor. Random.
Really?
I know.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, nice.
And a guy named Thomas Lasorda.
Yes. Nice.
Former CEO of Chrysler Canada Group. Not the same Tommy Lasorda, but Thomas W. Lasorda, apparently.
And let me say, I've been to a couple of the atomic bar type places in Windsor, too.
Uh-huh.
And it's quite interesting. I'll just leave it at that. Let's just say that a dentist would make no money there. But
toothless.
Yes.
Huh? What? No. Well, speaking of toothless, the toothless Cubs in 2022 are shifting gears, allegedly. I'll keep using allegedly until it actually freaking happens, but. Been a kind of very interesting couple of weeks now with the Cubs. We'll start with Cubs real quick and then we'll jump to the White Sox. Yeah, so you Sox fans in the chat, look, bear with this. We're not gonna stick on this very long. Trust me, don't worry about it. Okay, but also you can shove a fungo sideways up your ass here because I'm gonna talk about it. we're moving into this, and so the Cubs have kind of been moving forward. A lot of rumors coming out that the Cubs right now are the front runners, according to all these betting sites, to land Carlos Correa. Cool with that, absolutely. John Morosi is feeding the Correa rumors right now. He's like certain, it seems. So that's
definitely fanning the flames.
Yeah. And it's getting fun for that. So I don't want to get my hopes up. I'm not ready to be hurt just yet, but it seems like the pressure is now mounting that Jed really doesn't have a choice at this point, that he's going to have to act, because if he fails to sign one of these big shortstops or these infielders, whatever we're going to call them, he's going to have to suffer, because Cub fans aren't going to be too happy. Cub fans have an expectation now that he's going to sign one of those big three and make some moves this offseason. So his biggest move thus far to start the offseason, boom, makes a trade with the Tampa Bay Rays for big-time infielder, outfielder, Miles Mastrobuoni, who has mostly played at AAA at the age of 27, where he actually was solid. He was a 300 hitter with a 377 on base percentage at AAA, which goes to show that hitting in the majors is tough, because his major league numbers are absolutely horrible. Sub 200, struggled, not getting it done, but he's 27. So I guess we'll see. He hit 188, 3 for 16. I mean, he only had 16 at plate appearances, whatever. He did steal a base. So he's barely had a cup of coffee. So this could be one of those sneaky good moves. A guy that has versatility, can play both the infield and the outfield, much like Morel. Another guy that can do very, very similar. But the Cubs are really looking for a center fielder. This might be a sneaky, easy move. I mean, it cost the Cubs Alfredo Zuraga is a 22-year-old. He was 1-0 with a 193 in relief appearances at low and high A. He was signed as a non-drafted free agent in 2021. So he was pretty good this year. So they might have Cubs might have given up a guy that might be a very good dude on the bump here in a couple of years. He is. There's one thing I don't like about this guy, and I have to be very honest. I don't want people to be offended, but when I look at this guy, I can't accept the fact that he is a graduate or a former player of the University of Nevada, Reno. Fuck UNR, right in their butts. up their nose with a rubber hose. So he is a Reno Wolf Pack. So, you know, F him on that. But no, he looks like a sneaky, cheap possibility to be a guy that could hit and maybe be at least a depth move. So I think it was actually a good start move. But then they, you know, from that, that was today's big, that was Jed's first big jump into the offseason. Today they also announced their 40-man roster. They're protecting Wade Davis. Wow, that's a different pitcher. Brennan Davis, their top prospect. They're protecting Kevin Alcantara, who was actually traded for Anthony Rizzo. And also younger pitchers, Ben Brown and Ryan Jensen. So that happened. So they protected those guys. It doesn't mean they're going to be up this year, but it does protect them from the Rule 5 draft. So there's a lot of value there. Alcantara, we had a guy, Greg Huss on our show on the Pinwheels and Ivy, and Greg is all over Alcantara. Thinks he's going to be the best of all the young prospects, along with Pete Crow Armstrong. So pretty cool there. So that's a big thing with the Cubs. Contreras passed on his qualifying offer. He's going to go out in the free market. He's gone. Cubs fans are seeing it and leave. You know, it's still shitty that they offered the QO, but the Cubs are going to get something back for it. At the same time, maybe people value him enough that he's going to get paid more. He'll get wooed and, you know, wine and dine anyway. And then speaking of former players, old friend alert, after we were told from Jed Hoyer that his offers to these guys would stand up on the open market, Anthony Rizzo today signed a 2-year deal with a 3rd-year option with the New York Yankees that in 3 years pays him more than he would have been paid in 4 years with Jed's lowball offer. And in fact, rivals in 5 years absolutely is more than what Jed offered in 4 years passes what Jed offered in his 5 years. So Rizzo won. He bet on himself and won, and now made himself quite a good chunk of change. That 3rd-year option comes with a $6 million buyout. So he's guaranteed to make, basically the same amount of money that was offered him in 4 years in the last 3 years. So no one said it was people say, oh, it's not a low ball. It was a low ball. And Anthony Rizzo had the ability to opt out his first year to improve on this contract like he did, something, again, Jed wasn't going to give him. So Jed now is one, if you count Kyle Schwarber, because that was obviously just DFAing him or non-tendering him, that's a big boo-boo. He's really 1-for-4 on that major core, standing up to the local, you know, the open market kind of thing. So that's just me throwing out some shade with the Cubs. So that's our Cubs update. But with the White Sox, you know, there's some free agent chatter, but let's talk about who the White Sox protected and added the other 40 man, Pete.
Yeah, let me say fit. That right field porch is absolutely made for him. And frankly, the Yankees had to get Rizzo back in the fold. They had to. What are you going to do? Put LeMahieu at first base for him? You know what I mean? So I think it was a great move by the Yankees to get him back. And yeah, but they still need left-handed pop. That's the part of it too. True. I mean, most of their guys are right-handed. So, you know, well, Judge, who knows what happens with Judge. Stanton's right-handed.
Dodgers.
The ghost of Josh Donaldson's right-handed.
Right. Yankees are going to stuck with Donaldson.
And I'll Judge give, is going to end up Jed,
in L.A.
I think Judge is in San Francisco, which I think would be a mistake,
right.
We're talking about San Francisco. I don't think that park is made for home run hitters.
It's tough. Yeah. It's a tough place to
I
hit.
Just don't think he's going to do well. I think he'll have a higher batting average. He'll have a higher batting average, but I don't think he's going to have the power. And unfortunately, Judge can go no place but down. What's he going to do for an encore of 62 homers? If he goes to San Francisco, he ain't hitting 63.
Here's me going, what if the Rockies were like, okay, and, hey, Judge, once you join KB here, you guys both together, back to back at that high altitude, Judge would hit like 80 probably there.
Oh, yeah. You know, I just wish I could have seen – I would love to have seen Frank Thomas in his prime in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
Hitting in that light air.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't gotten to see a healthy KB
yet.
He
would have probably had 70 homers.
Yeah. I think KB's, I think this year KB hits 40. I think that and he's Frank feeling Thomas, good.
Yeah. And KB being ripped on by Mad Dog Chris Russo on today's High Heat. I got to watch a little bit at lunchtime.
Well, whatever. All I know is that he's on a different workout plan now. Here's the difference now, too, because KB now this offseason, he's on the Colorado Rockies offseason plan. He's not on the Chicago Cubs offseason plan. Obviously, the Chicago Cubs offseason plan has not been very, I guess, efficient with keeping him healthy throughout 162 games. So, from what it sounds like.
Chicago offseason plans haven't been healthy.
Yeah, well, from what I'm hearing from the old Bryant camp is that he's loving it. He feels good. He feels stronger. He's doing more heavy weights than he's done in the past, which is interesting. And that he is his regiment now is the regiment that a mid to older aged player does to extend careers and continue their careers deeper. So he is now in this phase, I think, of his career where he is doing the off-season conditioning as much preparation for his body to handle the wear and tear it is his body to be able to hit the baseball perfectly. And, you know, let's be honest, when you're younger, you're not working on that longevity muscle. You're working on what muscles do I need right now to hit the balls far as possible and as often as possible. And now he's going to have to shift a little bit. And I think that little balance might actually benefit his body as a whole when he comes to being healthy too. But he says he feels great. His foot's good. He's been running full speed. We missed him at the golf tournament, but Chasen and I had a great time out there, and Chasen actually went closest to the pin. So that was kind of cool. And he gave me the prize. That was nice. So I got a nice $200 gift card to Oscar. Yeah, I'm going to go to Oscars and get some steak. So $200 gift card, though. That was nice. He was making fun of my golf club.
Outstanding. Really, as far as the White Sox, they...
Aaron Rill was cool.
Tell him to buy you a new set. I'm sure he's got some hookups with like Callaway or TaylorMade.
Yeah, and Jose Canseco is dead to me.
What's that?
He is A-Rod to me now. Jose Canseco is A-Rod to me. I'll just put it out this way.
Did he not show?
The night before the event, when he's been advertised as one of the big names, there was a business even that came in, paid a large chunk of money to have him in their foursome. Calls up at the last minute, Sunday night, and starts demanding that he get paid for this charity event that he agreed to months ago as a charity guest. And so, yeah, no, they were like, excuse me. No, we can't. Nope. Sorry about that, buddy. So he bailed. Never showed up. Claimed that he was on an airplane flight and he was too tired. He overslept or some weird shit the next day, but he absolutely burned the whole charity golf tournament. So he is now A-Rod to him, to me. So he can take his Sasquatches and shove them. But you know who was really nice, actually? Raleigh Fingers. Great. He was a real nice guy. I knew his son. Covered his son at
the golf Fingers before, and he's a good guy.
He was pretty nice. He's a little bit grumpy sometimes. He was really kind of by himself. He was just hanging around. Like Aaron Rowan and those guys, he had his own little crew. Chad Hermanson, another guy that played for the Pirates for a while, a guy that I've known forever. He was out. It was weird watching everybody kind of like mix and match. A lot of those guys see each other a lot because whether it's working out or like playing even in men's league when you're retired. So they had all had a fun little bond. And Josh Towers was there. Josh is cool. He's funny. He's got a radio show on VSiN too. But it was good though. I mean, it was fun to see those guys. But Raleigh, you know, Jose burned us. Jose was he's dead to me now. But next year the tournament's gonna be even cooler because we're gonna have a lot more of these current major leaguers plus a lot of these guys that are just hanging it up recently. So the event itself was great. They raised a ton of money. I don't know what the exact amount was, but ton of money.
The contact for a certain person to reach out to. I think with him, you just need
to make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, I think with him, you just need to give more time. Mm-hmm. So
starting the planning. We're going to have a meeting in first week of December. Start for the next year.
Okay, I do plan on coming out there next year. So once you get the date finalized, let me know.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be a much, and it's going to even be the helicopter ball drop. Actually, was freaking amazing. I had never seen one of those before. We didn't win, but I thought that was pretty rad. Like they dropped these balls, like it was like bucket, and then whichever ball, the numbered ball, is closest to the pin or in the hole, won half the prize. And the prize was, I mean, it was like, I think the winner, I think the ball drop itself netted like $11,000. So the person that won like $5,500. And they donated it right back to the charity. So that was even nicer. Nice. I was like, oh, shit.
Nice.
So there were some big pockets there, apparently. And then the auction was cool. I won a bat. And I had all the guys sign it. That was kind of fun. It was like a commemorative bat. I tried to go after that. What was it? Fred Lynn. That Fred Lynn bat. Was it Fred Lynn?
Fred Lynn? No, it wasn't Lynn.
No, who was it? Somebody who played for the Twins.
Was it Maurer?
No, like he was a guy in the 80s. '80s righty. Maybe Ken Herbeck? No, was he?
Herbeck, yes. Herbeck would maybe be Ken there in the
80s. Yeah, I had a couple of tequilas, okay? It was a little bit hard at that point. I almost won that one. I was looking at that bat, and it was like a bat that a game-used bat from some sort of, like, one of his big, you know, his phone else, they totally outbid me, but I was like on eBay. I'm like, how much would a bat like this cost? I'm like, oh. I'm like, and I was like, nope, that guy, he took a little high. Someone jumped me. They jumped me by like $600. I'm like, nope. Okay. Right. I'm going to go sit down now.
I was like, so but as far as the White Sox, the White Sox decided to put add two players to the 40 man. And one was expected, and I was up in the air about. And it was Brian Ramos, who I think everyone and their mother expected the White Sox to put on, and Jose Rodriguez. Now, the reason I was up in the air about Rodriguez, I thought they could have possibly slid him through because he did have a broken hand during the season. And I was saying, you know, it's worth the gamble to not put him on to see if you could get him through, since he did have a broken hand, and I don't see teams wanting to pick him up because of that. So, but those are the two they put on the roster. And Rick Hahn also made a move today. He struck gold. And what he did was Rick Hahn signed another arm, a left-handed arm, by the name of Nate Fisher, also nicknamed the Banker. Now, Nate Fisher's career line is basically 4 wins and 5 losses with a .385 games, I believe it is. Pitched with the Mets last year for a little bit. This is, all joking aside, this is strictly a depth move because the White Sox ran into some issues in Charlotte last year where they did not have enough pitchers to actually field a rotation. So they don't be surprised to see them picking up depth pieces pitching-wise. You know, and Nate Fisher was offered a minor league contract with a invite to spring training. Don't be surprised to see the Sox doing a lot of this because they need to replenish a lot of pitching depth in the minors. Also, during the weekend, and I can't remember the gentleman's name. Let me see if I can find it. The White Sox hired a new strength and conditioning coach. The gentleman, where is it at? Nope. He was with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and I'm just stalling till I find the tweet for it. He was with the Arizona Diamondbacks, but he is a Chicago guy who decided to come back to Chicago. Where is it at? Don't mind me. His name is Logan Jones. He is a Chicago guy coming back to Chicago. He will be the strength and conditioning coach for the White Sox. So it's obvious that they are cleaning out the old strength and conditioning team, if you will, and bringing in new blood. Hopefully this can curb some of the injuries that were sustained throughout the last couple of years. There is also a rumor I have heard from a couple of different people that the White Sox have a coach that will be returning, that Daryl Boston will be returning as one of the coaches for the White Sox. This has not been announced publicly, but I've heard it from a couple of different people that Debo will be back with the White Sox, which I am not keen on. To me, it's just, you know, what has this fucking guy accomplished? Honestly, what has he accomplished that he deserves to have a go round with his fourth manager? He was there for Ventura. He was there for Renteria. He was there for La Russa. Now he's going to be there for Grifol. What in the world has this guy accomplished? He's also the outfield coach. Tell me how many strides the outfielders have made with him working with them. Now, I will give him a benefit of the doubt on trying to teach Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets how to play the outfield, because you had players playing out of position too. So I just am – the White Sox take one step forward in getting rid of most of the coaching staff. Then they take two steps back by bringing one of them back. It is typical White Sox business, you know. So what they're going to do this offseason, who the hell knows, because you have two options looking at them. You either have – put all your chips in for 2023, because some of the contracts start falling off after 23. Giolito and Grandal, 23 is their last year. Giolito is not re-signing with the White Sox. Just accept that right now. After the $50,000 fiasco last year, I don't see him being back. 24, you start to lose. Anderson's last option year is in 24, I believe. So after the 24 season, Anderson's probably gone. You start losing all your players. You know, there's no way in hell, if Mancada plays the way he does, that they're going to exercise the 25 option on Mancada for like $28 million. They'll pay him the buyout. So you have two options here. Either A, you put all your chips in 23, or B, you begin the rebuild now. That's where it is. So I think what's going to happen, what's going to happen with that is to be determined. But I think some of the moves they make when they're talking about trades, if you think about it, them talking about, they'll have more fruitful, you know, avenues in trades rather than signing contracts. To me, that's not a positive sign, but that's just me. So I hope I'm wrong. I've been wrong before. I thought Ozzy was going to be the manager. So I got to wear that one, because I was afraid Ozzy was going to be named manager. And I know he got serious consideration. But fortunately, they did not hire Ozzy and all the drama that ensues with him. So, you know, and my partner was giving me shit about it the whole time.
What?
But again, I will stick with this. The White Sox take one step forward, then they take two steps back. They can't fucking help themselves. It's what they do. And one of the things I'm working on right now, I'll say this, is I'm actually writing a blog about how the White Sox, as a business, can improve their customer experience. Because they have a lot of work they need to do.
I'm cracking up over here. My guy from the Pinwheels and Ivy, Zoe, Southside Zoe, he did an MLB The Show simulation with the 2023 White Sox getting Nemo, by the way, as an outfielder.
Okay.
And they signed Trey Mancini.
Let me guess the record. Don't say it. Okay. But when you finish the roster, let me guess the record.
Okay. And so, yeah, so he does this whole thing. This is the funny part. So his lineup right now is Tim Anderson, Luis Robert, Brandon Drury, Eloy Jimenez, Brandon Nemo, Andrew Vaughn, Moncada, Grandal, and Cody Bellinger. So this is his team. This is Zoe's dream. Like, okay. Zoe probably made this lineup with like tissue and lotion nearby. And he built this together. You've got a starting
rotation. Like that South Park name?
I like when you go out west. Go west for internet. It's one of my favorite episodes. So he's got, looks like he's got Dylan Cease, Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, Kopech, and then Ryan Pepiot, whatever. Fuck, I don't know. Not gonna work here next week.
Anyway, I have no idea.
And then you've got bullpen. You've got Jake Diekman. You've got Matt Foster, Graveman, Joe Kelly, Ronaldo Lopez, Andre Jackson, Nick Padilla, Tanner Banks, and Bennett Sousa. So that's his.
Tanner Banks. Oh, I'm thinking Tanner McDougal. Never mind. I was going to say Tanner's not going to be awesome. Ready to come back yet.
I can't buy the game now myself. You know, you don't see on there in the bullpen,
Liam Hendricks for one.
Yeah. So it looks like somehow that's how he somehow like
did
made
you say
that
Liam Hendricks.
No, I think
I'm not Cody, sure. Did you say Cody or not Cody? Aaron Bummer.
No Bummer. I don't see a Crochet on here either. I don't know if maybe he scrolled. Maybe there's more on his roster if he scrolls down. I'm just looking at the picture he took. But here's great. 1 month into the season.
Well, Crochet. Wait, don't tell me the record. Let me guess. 1 month into the season, how many games? Let me just ask that.
I don't know how many. I don't have his record. You just the news. 1 month into the season,
because I'm saying like seven or eight wins.
Something happened.
I'm saying like seven or eight wins.
He traded Hendricks for Pepio. Okay, there you go. Pepwa. Yeah, no. 1 month into the season, White Sox injury update. Eloy Jimenez sustained an injury, fractured arm during today's game. And we'll be out 1 to 2 months. It's still in April. And then Luis Robert sustained an injury, broken ankle during today's game. It appears he'll be out for 1 to 2 months. I am dead. Now, Grandal hit 327 out of April. Moncada hit 316. Drury has 7 nukes. Nemo has 5 bombs as well as Dylan Cease has a 225 ERA. Gio has a 129 whip. And the Guardians are pretty good, apparently. But they're a half game behind the Guardians at 16-11. Currently, their first 27 games. So not bad.
Okay. Don't. And I'm saying this.
Twins are on a heater, though. The Twins have 8-10. Yeah. Ooh, Twins are right behind them on their heels.
Yeah. Don't discount this. Jose Abreu to Cleveland. Don't discount that. Ouch.
Okay. Oh, you want guess your final season? He simulated to the end. I got to finish.
Oh, so well, they definitely come up like 2 games short of Cleveland. So I'm going to say Cleveland was like 92-60, and the Sox are like 89-63.
What did you say? What do you think the White Sox would be?
89-63.
They finished. It's notice the White Sox have finished the season at 83-79. Unfortunately, this wasn't good enough to make the postseason. Better luck next season. Okay. That was ball game. White Sox Twitter melts down on the simulation. So
well,
funny.
I am that hoping really- that come July 31st or August 1st, whatever the trade deadline is, that they are shipping Giolito out. You know, because it's, you know, don't see, I know a lot of people are saying, oh, if you make a tweak here, you make a tweak there, they can win the division. No, this team needs major help. You know, sadly, this team needs major help. And I don't care what Zoe says. Him and Jake Diekman are long lost brothers. I don't care what he says.
I think he's the guy from what's it called? Ted Lasso. He's Ted Lasso's assistant. He's Coach Sunshine, Coach Rainbow.
The picture they show of Diekman on the scoreboard, him and Zoe could be long lost brothers.
Oh, absolutely.
And I know Zoe got mad at me when I said it, but I'm like, dude, deal with it. All you need to do is have the two of you ripping heaters while wearing an Atlanta Braves hat.
Oh yeah. Well, if you want to see the whole experience from Zoe, he's posted it up on his Twitter at Southside Zoe. I'm begging him to do a Cubs simulation with like my hopes for the roster and see how that plays out too. Cause I don't have the new MLB The Show, so I can't do it. And I'm not going to buy it just to do that. But, and I had a hard time. So when I downloaded when you sent me that free Madden. Yeah, they only let me download the PlayStation 5 version. I have a PS4. And I'm like, great.
Oh, jeez. I don't have any of them. Yeah. That's why I sent it to you.
Yeah. I was like, son of a bitch.
I got that as a gift from the Raiders.
Yeah. So either I have to
buy a PS5. The Colts Sunday. How do you lose to the Colts?
Oh, that game was great, though. It saved me my fantasy league because I had the last-minute mistake with freaking their quarterback switch, And Taylor finally showed up, saved my butt with that 66-yard touchdown run. I'm like, ooh. Yeah, yeah. Lost to the Colts. But you see the Colts?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. I'm talking about you're talking about Denver? No. Hey, Denver lost to the Colts.
I'm talking about the Raiders and the Colts.
Oh, Raiders lost to the Colts. Yeah, sorry. I'm thinking, yeah, Denver lost to the Jag. No, who did they play? Who did Denver play? Well, wasn't anybody good, man. Whatever.
Denver's lost a couple of games that you're like, how did
they're terrible? This game? They're so bad. Russell. It was in Jacksonville. Yeah. I give up. It was so memorable that I fucking forgot.
Remember when people wanted Russell Wilson?
Oh man, he's been so bad. Remember
when people wanted Russell Wilson as quarterback of the Bears? By the way, shameless plug. Next episode. Yeah. Okay. Yes. By the way, a shameless plug. The next episode of our guy Brian's podcast, It's Getting Drafty in Here, features the previously mentioned Father Zoe. So tune in for that. Let him know how he looks just like Jake Diekman, too. And you can tell him I said it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, as we kind of like get close to kind of winding down to I just want to touch real quick because Pete hasn't seen it. So I'm just going to be real vague with this. If you actually if you hit our YouTube page up, by the way, make sure you like.
I've heard a lot of the points. So
smash the like button. Make sure you guys are subscribing here at the Tainted Gloves YouTube page. But I did post. I've been doing the Monday reviews every Monday of films that I watch over the weekend. And this one was Wakanda Forever. So if you want like kind of a little bit decent further review, I'm going to save the more extended review. I think next week next show, we can really break down a little bit more of the Wakanda Forever, because I'm sure Pete will have seen it by the time Thanksgiving has passed. And we'll also be able to talk hopefully about The Fablemans, which is coming soon, which is going to be now my most anticipated film of the year.
Yes.
And we'll get back to that eventually. Oh, but
come on, dude. There's a movie that should be more anticipated than that. Come on.
Not when you have a Steven Spielberg.
Violent Night all the way.
Steven Spielberg writing and directing a film about how he fell in love with film and about his love of film as the greatest filmmaker to ever live is the coolest thing I've ever heard. And I'm so stoked for that. And this is the cool thing. The rating so far, it has the highest Metacritic score of any film released in 2022. It has an A cinema score, cinema grade, or whatever it's called. And it won the Venice Film Festival, which films like Green Book and then Parasite and those types of films always win. It's basically like if you win Venice, you're more than likely going to win the Best Picture. So I am stoked hearing that this is possibly Spielberg's best film ever. It's a film he said it's taken 40 years to finally put together. The way he's talking about the filmmaking process, I feel like this is going to be a gem. I'm super stoked. So that's coming, but Wakanda Forever, I did post a review on that already. It's on there. It's on our YouTube page. Next show, we'll get into Wakanda Forever. I'm sure we'll be talking about whatever else has come out too, but, side note, see Wakanda Forever. It doesn't feel like 2 hours and 41 minutes. It feels like a normal lengthy film. It's a great memorial, bookended memorial, for Chadwick Boseman, which is really sad, you know, that his passing, you know, prior to being able to film this. And it also is a plot that really introduces a whole new set of characters into the MCU. I'm a huge fan of Namor, the second major mutant to appear in the MCU. He's kind of a cool anti-hero, not good, not necessarily bad, doing what he can to protect his people. Angela Bassett is a dream. She puts together one of the most powerful performances I've seen in a Marvel film. She's in her intensity, especially in her speeches inside both the UN and, of course, to the council. Those two things are insanely good. She is so good. And, you know, it's a good flick. So give it a see. Maybe, you know, if you're a big fan of the first Black Panther, you're going to absolutely love it. Look, I'm not digging too deep. I know some people like criticize like some of our reviews because it was like too milky toast. I'm like, it was just a good movie. I enjoyed it. Like, it's not my part to comment on the patriarchy or things that Ryan Coogler was trying to speak on. I'm actually here to listen. So I sat back and I listened and I enjoyed what I saw. I enjoyed what I heard. So put that aside. Wakanda Forever is a good, it's a good MCU edition. Definitely go see it. It's already made more than $180 million. It set the November release record. It set the IMAX November release record. It is filmed specifically for IMAX. I saw it in IMAX 3D. I recommend going with IMAX 3D. not only do you get to see that film, you also get to see a really, really gorgeous 3D IMAX trailer of Avatar 2, Way of the Water. So you get to see that, and it's gorgeous too. So that one gave me a little bit of blood flow as well. So that's just a little toss in there. I mean, my next reviews this weekend, it's going to be The Menu and then Spirited, the new Ryan Reynolds, Will Ferrell, A Christmas Carol parody, make whatever you want to call it, musical comedy thing. So that'll be next week's review. But yeah, hop over there. Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out there. And then, of course, make sure you guys are checking out Yumper and Svo at the show, by the way, at Yumper and Svo. They're doing their stuff too. Yump's been really putting together some cool content with him, and we're going to get some story time with Svo hopefully here really soon. And I really need it really badly.
I hope so. I love story time with Svo. I just want to run over to his house and sit on his lap. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to run over to his house and sit on his lap while he does it.
Talk about the first thing that pops up.
Yes, wait, exactly. What? But, I did get a chance to see the HBO documentary "Say Hey, the Willie Mays Story." Very, very, very good. It covers his baseball career, but it also covers some of the social issues that he encountered in the 50s and 60s and everything else. Of course, being who he was and, you know, the color of his skin, unfortunately. And some issues he encountered in San Francisco, which I never knew about. Did you know he had a problem buying a house in San Francisco?
Oh, did not know that. Really?
Yes. Yes. They would not. They fought tooth and nail to not have him buy a house in San Francisco when the Giants moved there.
That's a little bit shocking, but not shocking, I guess, when you think about it. You're still there, you know.
Yeah, but I'm here. But I definitely recommend this documentary. And joking aside, I'm looking forward to Violent Night. I mean, Santa Claus killing people. What more do you want? I mean, honestly. And then I'm looking forward to the new Avatar movie, more so for the visual. I don't know about the story. I'll see what the story is. But I'm really looking forward to the visual, because when I went and seen Amsterdam, I did see a preview of Avatar. And to your point, damn, it looks good. Visually, it looks stunning.
Okay, yeah. And it's the technology, yeah, too. Actually, I'm such an excuse, yep. Right? With my class, because Avatar 2 is coming out, and I obviously teach video production and film, the technology for the new Avatar film is absolutely incredible. It's evolved from the previous technical advances that he made for the first Avatar film, which was the 3D motion capture, the rig and the yes, sim rig, and so. That he created that, for that film. And then, it was the virtual camera system was really cool. I got to play with it actually at the EMP project in Seattle at one point. But, 10 years it took to invent the tech for the first Avatar. And now it's taken him another 10 years to evolve that. And the new stuff is underwater tech, down to the point where he actually has sensors when they're filming in the water, wearing motion capture, equipment. They're also using what's called, it's a 3D submersible beam splitter called DeepX 3D. So it's a camera that underwater, it's 3D imagery underwater without any kind of like aberrations. It's insane. And then the facial capture stuff is now transitioned, because a lot of the film takes place underwater. They've censored the water. So the water has sensors. So as the actors are now moving within the water, you're also getting real water. It's not simulated water. It's the water is moving the way the actors are actually moving within the water in the pool that they're filming these scenes in as they animate this stuff. So there's just so much stuff coming through with this. Yeah. Like we talked about, the tech, man. When you look at this camera rig, it's insane. Because again, filming underwater is like the kryptonite of all filmmakers. Water screws everything up. Yeah. I mean, this is why Jaws took, went over budget and over their days of filming for it was supposed to be, I think it was like the 100 and some odd days filming Jaws, because people would the film would get wet or the technology would get wet and it makes it difficult. And so, even on Titanic, I'm sure that James Cameron had those issues, and He's invented something that he can use.
All of them had issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this one, now he's invented a technology that can handle it, which is just, I know for random like filmmakers are like, so no big deal, but this, it's a freaking big deal. Just like with Shrek. Shrek was a big deal, man. Shrek was the first film to actually animate fire realistically. That was a first, and people don't, you know, it might be, you take it for granted a little bit, but sometimes the hardest things look so easy. And Waterworld was a masterpiece, Brian. You are so right. The gills behind Kevin Costner's ears. Actually, you know what, though? I will say Dennis Hopper was badass in that movie. So I will. He's awesome in everything. Yumper, you're right. Make sure you check out our Tiki Talkie, too. We have TikTok. Pete does some TikTok dances. It's great. He's been really working on his twerk lately. And so he hop on there for some Aloha Pete twerk videos.
I threw my head out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Yumper does a lot of fan stuff for Encanto, which is great. So you get a lot of and content.
And also I have a new TikTok that's coming. I've been trying to get down the Wally Dick dance. So we'll see if I'm able to pull it off or not.
It requires a lot of flopping.
Yes, it does. But before we finish, I do want to bring up a couple things. The guys from the 108 released tickets, put tickets up for sale for 108 Day, which will be on January 7th, 2023 at Reggie's, which is like 18th and State, 19th and State. If you haven't gotten tickets yet, I strongly suggest you do, because it generally does sell out rather quickly. And don't complain to them about the service fees that go with the ticket prices, because that's all run through Reggie's. So yell at Reggie's about the service fees. The next thing I wanted to bring up was
if I can maybe make it, maybe my flight won't get canceled as I'm on the way to the airport, like this year when I was on my way because of all the weather
in
Frontier Airlines. Shit.
Yeah.
Last minute.
Yeah. And then also next Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, the U.S. will be playing in the World Cup, and our friends the Bums are having a watch party for the U.S. World Cup match. I am not a World Cup guy. I don't know the first thing about soccer, football, whatever you want to call it. I don't know who they're playing, but I know that the Bums are having a watch party at Jack's Place, which is in Chicago Ridge. I went to their last watch party, which was the godforsaken Bears-Vikings game, and I had a great time there. The taco cart was outstanding. So I strongly suggest getting the taco cart if you go there.
Okay. Taco cart would be a power suggestion if you're headed on in there. That's good. 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 Yep. Ooh. Yeah. We should look into doing one of those kind of watch parties for something like you, me, Swo, you know, Brian, that other guy. I forgot that other guy's name. What's that other guy's name?
Yeah.
I forgot. Lumper?
Yumpito?
Lumpito, yes.
Yumpencato?
Lumpito Nyanga. He was in Wakanda Forever. No, and of course, our favorite Yump. That'd be fun to do a little thing like that, to do a little watch party where we. I would love to do a little. I mean, can you do movies on those things? I'd like to do like a Mystery Science Theater kind of watch party and do something like that.
I'd love to do a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type thing.
Yeah, because there's some, I mean, watching a bad movie is great, but I would love to do like Black Dynamite. Great flick. It's a good one to do like a watch party with, because he throws a punch at the beginning that doesn't land till the end. And I love it.
Yeah.
But make sure you guys check that out. Check out that watch party with the bums. Again, make sure you guys give the sibling. I don't know if it's offensive to call you our sister programs, but you whatever. Our brother, sister, whatever. Our sibling
peers.
Programs, Yumper and Svo at the show, as well as Brian's awesome new It's Getting Drafty and Her show, where they draft shit and it's fun and they talk about it and it'll be great. And he's got a lot of stuff coming out. So that's definitely a new fun one. We did the first one a couple weeks or whatever last week, and it was great, but now it's going to be fun to watch Brian kind of run with it. And as he slowly gets comfortable with his intro, and as he slowly gets comfortable with the not insulting me on Twitter using their account, learning lessons there. I delete him from our Tiny Glove website. But no, kidding. It's great to watch these guys. So give those guys some support. They're great dudes. And we're throwing a bow on this thing. Make sure, you know, we really appreciate you guys tuning in tonight. You know, Thanksgiving's coming up, so it's a great opportunity. You know, I think me and my fiance might be heading to San Diego for Thanksgiving, so we might get to see Willie P possibly over the weekend. You know, for me, as we kind of wrap a bow on this, the next time we're going to see you will be after the holiday. And I just wanted to wish all of you guys a happy Thanksgiving. You know, if we throw out things that we're thankful for, I'm extremely thankful for the these guys on the Tainted Glove Network. I'm extremely thankful for Pete. I mean, Pete and I have been doing this now for a year and a half. And you know, it's always a gift to be able to sit here and chat baseball with him, because you know, he's one of the best and most stand-up dudes I know. You know, Yumpers, Flo, those guys, you know, our little text chats are like, you know, I communicate with you guys probably more than anybody else right now, and along with the Pinwheels and Ivy guys. It's great to, you know, it's just, I'm very thankful for you guys in our life, and you know, for you guys, just, you know, that tune in, that support us, that listen to us. Thankful for you guys as well. You know, we do this because we love it, and we love sports, movies, talking Yahoo. But for us too, it's just an opportunity to get to hang out with some friends, especially from a great continental divide from across the country. And you know, with the holidays up, and I hope, you know, I know some people have the tendency to feel a little bit down. If you're going through those motions, you know, make sure you guys, you know, if that's you, you're not alone. Reach out to people. You know, don't let the holiday get you down. You know, you have air in your lungs. We only get one shot at this, so stick around a little bit. You know, give somebody a call if you need a little bit of help. But you know, I wish all of you guys the best Thanksgiving. I hope you guys you know, have a great time, eat a lot of turkey, make a cheesy smoof, which is my favorite, which is basically take Hawaiian bread with your leftovers, you put turkey, add cheese on it, some stuffing, you bake it. Oh my God, it's so good. You make that the next day when you're hungover, by the way. Have it ready though the night before. Yeah. And then, you know, for you guys though, I really do appreciate you guys. And you know, from my end, I hope you guys have a great Thanksgiving weekend, and that you have a safe holiday. You know, it's big holiday number one, I guess we'll call it, here in the fall season, where everyone's going to gain a couple pounds here and there. But again, appreciate you guys. I'm very thankful for you guys. And so this Thanksgiving, I do that. One of my biggest blessings are you guys. So I really thank you guys. Appreciate you, Pete, especially. You guys put up with me. I'm a little bit neurotic and a little bit mouthy sometimes, and I do appreciate that patience and flexibility. Friends choose each other, and friends are the families that you do choose. If I'm going to quote, what's it called? The movie last year with the, oh God, now I forgot the name of the movie, but, poignant line is that friends are the family you choose, and I choose you guys. You guys are family to me, so I appreciate you. And with that, I'll turn it over to you for your final thoughts and let you kind of take us on out of here, bud.
Well, I had some final thoughts prepared, but I think you stole almost all of them. So, I echo everything you said about, you know, Thanksgiving and family and friends and everything else. Family, you never know when they won't be there. But also, let's be nice to each other. Just someone smiles and says hello, just smile and say hello back. It's little things like that that make all the difference in the world to someone, especially if they're struggling with something. So I'll leave it with that. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Hopefully you have a wonderful holiday. To stop by and say hi if you're there. I'll be making fun of the bums, of course, because that's what I do. But aside from that, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And with that, I'll turn it over to the person who would be the Santa Claus of our little band of merry misfits. Yeah, dog, take it away. And aloha.
So I was really, really proud of Aloha, Mr. Hand, when I heard he got a par 11 on the windmill hole at the mini golf course. So that's pretty fucking cool. Yeah, dog.